Will the members please show their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
39 present.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, no one is excused from the call today.
The prayer today is by Reverend McNabb of the Douglas Methodist Church. Will the members please rise for the prayer?
Let's pray. Give us open eyes, O God, to see the wondrous beauty around us and to see it in your handiwork. Let all lovely things fill us with gladness and let them lift up our hearts in the sense of praise. Give us this day, O God, a strong and vivid sense that you are present with us. Let us do nothing today that would not meet your approval, go anywhere or court any companion that would deprive us of your companionship. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
Will the chief clerk please certify as to the correctness of the previous day's journal?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 17th day.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 17th day be approved as certified by the chief clerk.
There's no objection. The journal for the 17th day stands approved. Are there guests for introduction to the House today? Representative Guy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery A, there are three gentlemen from the Yukon-Kuskokwim region, Representative Herbert and my constituents. Their names are Larry Beans, Owen Ivan, and Carl Jack.
I'd like to, Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to introduce a constituent of ours. Started work as a page a couple of days ago from Thorn Bay, Stephanie Holcomb. Over in the corner.
I'd like to introduce a former constituent of Representative Freeman's and mine in Gallery A, Mr. Aaron Isaacs. Are there further guests for introduction? Messages from the governor?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate?
Mr. Speaker, the President has appointed the following members to a free conference committee to meet with the like committee from the House to consider Senate Bill number 161 amended and House Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 161, non-renewable resource revenues to legislative oversight. Senator Holman, Chairman, Senator Mulcahy, Senator Ferguson. I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Communications.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Speaker, I would move the reconsideration of House Bill 411 at this time and ask that that reconsideration be held over one legislative day.
If there's no objection, the reconsideration of House Bill 411 will be held over for one legislative day.
May we be at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order? Reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Resources has had House Concurrent Resolution 34. Urging the governor to support Nevada's legal challenge to federal control of public land in that state under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 34 and recommends that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Miles, Chairman, concurred in by Miles, Osterbach, Halford, Chatterton, Carney, Cotton, and Jaroff. House Concurrent Resolution 34 has no further referral. The Committee on State Affairs has had House Concurrent Resolution 35. A study of a rail line from Fairbanks to the Ladue Valley under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 35 and recommends that it do pass and further recommends that it be referred to the Finance Committee. The report was signed by Mr. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by Miller, Gardner, Fuller, Parker, Eliason, Metcalf, and Martin. House concurrent resolution number 35 has no further referral. The Committee on Resources has had House Joint Resolution 55 relating to the efforts of the State of Nevada to test the right of the federal government to control land under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 55 and recommends that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Miles, Chairman, concurred in by Miles, Osterbach, Halford, Chatterton, Carney, Cotton, and Jaroff. House Joint Resolution 55 has no further referral. The Committee on Rules has had House Bill 509, a special appropriation to the Alaska Permanent Fund and providing for an effective date, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 509 rules and recommends that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cotton, Chairman, concurred in by Cotton, Parr, Miller, Anderson, Hayes, and Brown. House Bill 509 appears on today's calendar. The Committee on Resources has had House Bill 597, a supplemental appropriation to the Department of Natural Resources for the Iditarod Trail Race, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Mr. Miles, Chairman, concurred in by Miles, Halford, Chatterton, Eliason, Fuller, Osterbach, and Jaroff. Cotton signed do pass, Mush. House Bill 597 has a further referral to Finance. The Committee on Health, Education, and Social Services has had House Bill 603, a special appropriation for the Women's Center at Anchorage Community College, under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mrs. Buchholz, Chairman, concurred in by Miles, Chatterton, Hurlburt, Barnes, Buchholz, and Munson. House Bill 603 has a further referral to Finance. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
There was a recommendation on House Concurrent Resolution 35 from the State Affairs Committee to refer HCR 35 to the Finance Committee. So at this time, HCR 35 will be referred to the Finance Committee. It was a resolution relating to a study of a rail line from Fairbanks to the Ladue Valley. Reports of special committees.
No, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation in memoriam, Irene Osterman, longtime resident of Kodiak and enthusiastic Alaskan, by Representative Jaroff and Senator Mulcahy. Citation in memoriam, Kristen A. Roust, pioneer Alaskan and former member of the Alaska Territorial Legislature, by Representatives Fuller, Duncan, Representatives Miller, Duncan, and Fuller. I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill number 74 by Rogers, Brown, Moss, Parr, and Smith. An act making an appropriation to the University of Alaska Working Capital Reserve Fund and providing for an effective date.
Finance.
House Bill 646 by Montgomery, Barnes, Bettesworth, Eliason, Fuller, Halford, Haugen, Hayes, McKinnon, Malone, Martin, Moss, Munson, Phillips, and Rogers. An act making a special appropriation to the Student Scholarship Revolving Loan Program and providing for an effective date.
Hess and Finance.
House Bill 647 by Martin and Barnes. An act establishing the Alaska Commission on the Family and providing for an effective date.
Hess and Finance. Representative Martin.
Speaker, I'd like to ask that this bill be held over until 2 p.m. this afternoon to give House members an opportunity to preview it and perhaps co-sponsor it.
House Bill 647 will be held in the Chief Clerk's desk 1 hour after adjournment.
House Bill 648 by Malone and Duncan, an act relating to fire prevention.
CRA.
House Bill 649 by Rogers, an act relating to appropriations to and management of appropriations and program receipts by the University of Alaska and establishing the University of Alaska Working Capital Reserve Fund and providing for an effective date.
Finance.
House Bill 650 by Cotton, Anderson, Hayes, Meekins, Munson, Phillips, and Gardner, and act increasing the Alaska longevity bonus and providing for an effective date.
Hess and Finance. Representative Cotton. House Bill 650 will be held over in the Chief Clerk's office 1 hour after adjournment.
House Bill 651 by Buchholz, Parker, and Cotton, an act establishing the Alaska Community College System and providing for an effective date.
Hess and Finance. Representative Malone.
Speaker, may we have a brief at ease?
House, please stand at ease. Representative Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, could we return to introduction of guests?
Under introduction of guests, Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In Gallery B, I'd like to introduce two friends and constituents of myself and Representative Montgomery, Wally Wallenstein and Lauren Lounsbury.
I'd like to add a finance referral to House Bill 648, which was just introduced. Representative Montgomery.
Mr. Speaker, could House Bill 646 be held for 1 hour? I've had requests to have other people join that.
House Bill 646 will be held 1 hour after adjournment. I might mention while we're introducing bills that there is a deadline on the introduction of personal bills. I think it is the 35th day, which is about February 17th, which is, I think, Sunday, but we will accept introduction. The last day will be Monday because we won't be in session on Sunday, so might keep that in mind.
Speaker?
Representative Miller?
Just as a word of advice from past years, what you said is exactly right. That's the technical deadline. There's a practical deadline in drafting, so that if members have slightly complicated bills, they shouldn't wait till the 33rd or the 34th day and say, hey, I need this by tomorrow morning. It's it makes for a terrible problem with our drafting attorneys, and so there, you need to subtract from that that 35th day in order to find out when you really have to start getting your homework done.
We'll continue with the introduction of bills.
Mr. Speaker, there's a governor's letter that's 5 pages long that's been duplicated and placed on each member's desk that accompanies the governor's energy package. House Bill 652, with a letter and two fiscal notes by the Rules Committee by request of the governor, an act relating to the Alternative Technology Revolving Loan Fund.
Resources and Finance.
House Bill 653 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to bulk fuel and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance.
House Bill 654 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act making appropriations to the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, and the Office of the Governor for bulk fuel matters and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance.
House Bill 655 by the Rules Committee by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to residential fuel conservation credits and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
There's no objection. We'll revert to reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Commerce has had House Joint Resolution 52. Relating to proposed FAA regulations regarding the security of air taxi operators under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 52 and recommends it do pass. Report was signed by Mr. Brown, Chairman, concurred in by Munson, Halford, Bettisworth, Randolph, Malone, and Brown. House Joint Resolution 52 has a further referral to Judiciary. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Brings us to consideration of the daily calendar. Will the Chief Clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill 509 by Freeman, Haugen, Gardner, Miller, Byrne, Branson, Brown, Buchholz, Chatterton, Halford, Hayes, McKinnon, Malone, Martin, Metcalf, Miles, Montgomery, Moss, Munson, O'Connell, Osterbach, Phillips, Rogers, and Smith. An act making a special appropriation to the Alaska Permanent Fund and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 509 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 509 and recommends that it do pass and attaches a letter of intent. The report was signed by Mr. Meekins, Chairman, concurred in by Meekins, Freeman, Rogers, McKinnon, Duncan, Moss, Guy, Montgomery, Haugen, and Smith. Schaefer has no recommendation. The Committee on Rules has had House Bill 509 under consideration. A majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 509 rules and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cotton, Chairman, concurred in by Cotton, Parr, Miller, Anderson, Hayes, and Brown. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the Rules Committee substitute for House Bill number 509 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
There is objection. Can we have an explanation? Representative Cotton.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. As noted, the Rules Committee made a committee substitute, and what we've done is required that a permanent fund management structure be in place before this appropriation would take place. As you know, House Bill 161 is now in free conference, and there's, from our point of view, some very promising progress being made on the bill. I certainly expect it to pass. But in the event that that bill doesn't pass, I, for one, like the opportunity to reconsider this appropriation. It may well be that we'll decide to go ahead and make the appropriation anyway. That still would remain a possibility. But for the moment, I'd like the assurance that the permanent fund management structure will be in place before this appropriation could be made.
Is there objection maintained? There's no further objection. The Rules Committee substitute for House Bill number 509 will be adopted. Are there amendments?
I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Rules Committee substitute for House Bill number 509 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
If there's no objection, Rules Committee substitute for House Bill number 509 will be advanced, engrossed, third reading, and placed on final passage. Will the clerk please read the bill in third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill number 509 rules by the Rules Committee. An act making a special appropriation to the Alaska Permanent Fund and providing for an effective date.
The gentleman from Ketchikan, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, to start with, I would like to say that I view this moment with a certain amount of pride, and I don't mean to say personal pride. I take pride in what's happening as far as the body's concerned. As far as pride and personal as authorship, that's wouldn't be quite fair for me to do that anyway, because I was quite surprised when we arrived here after the session, after the session started, and I pre-filed the bill to find that a couple of my colleagues had come up with the same idea. I just beat them to it. Mr. Rogers and Mr. McKinnon both had plans at one time for the same thing. So, except for the fact that I happened to be first, I could have been a co-sponsor rather than a prime sponsor, but it wouldn't have made any difference, Mr. Speaker. My enthusiasm for the idea would have been just as strong as it is on this one. I suppose, you know, we had a colleague in here one time that used to have a saying. He said, never miss an opportunity to sit down and shut up. And I suppose when you look at the number of co-sponsors, which are sufficient number to pass the bill, and the fact that some of the co-sponsors are on Finance Committee, the bill was reported out of Finance Committee with 10 do pass and one no recommendation signatures, I suppose the proper thing to do would be to sit down and get on with the vote. But I take a certain amount of pride in the fact that the House, I think, has taken expeditious action on this bill, because I think it is important. And I appreciate and take pride in the fact that the chairman of the Finance Committee gave it an expeditious hearing, gathered the information, and moved the bill on to Rules. I take pride in the fact that the Rules Committee has moved it on and made it one of the first, and I think, the major pieces of legislation that we've handled, or probably will handle this session. So, I at this time, as I said, the proper thing probably would be for me to sit down and shut up, but I'm not going to do that. I think the bill's going to pass. And maybe I'm going to be greedy. There are some members, I suspect the co-sponsors will all vote for it. We have a number of people who were maybes, doubt, had some doubts, were on the fence. And I've only run up against one of my colleagues who was unalterably opposed to the idea. So what I'm going to do, Mr. Speaker, if the co-sponsors will have the patience to stick with me, I'm going to make an effort on those people that are doubtful. I'm going to ask them to give me an opportunity to make my pitch, and then if they still have doubts, I'm going to ask them as a favor to give me the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to make every effort that I possibly can to see that there's no more than one red light on there. You know, that may be a vain hope, but I'm going to try. I'm going to give it my best shot. Mr. Speaker, $900 million is a lot of money. You know, sometimes in Finance Committee, when things are a little boring, when we've heard the same old pitch over and over and over, and you have nothing to do, and you're sitting there with this calculator in front of you, you do strange things sometimes just to see what you can do with figures. And I started with the idea, you know, how much money is $900 million? If, you know, the problem with, especially in the Finance Committee members, is you look down to figure and finance, you look down and that would be 9 2 0s, a decimal point and a zero, 900 up the top, and fine print it'll say in millions. But if you start with a micrometer and crisp, fresh $1 bills, let me tell you, and stack them up, let me tell you what you're going to get. If you stack $1 bills, one on top of the other, in the amount of $900 million, you would have a stack that was 598,752 feet tall. To make it a little easier to understand, that's 113.4 miles. $900 million is a lot of money when you look at it in that aspect. I was a little surprised the other day when a good friend of mine, the Director of Legislative Finance, a man I've admired and known for years, said, "Doesn't it seem strange that a man with your reputation in fiscal matters would be the prime sponsor of the largest single item bill in the history of this state?" And I'd never thought of that. The only thing I could say was, I'm not against appropriation bills. Some of them are good or some of them bad, and this just happens to be a good one. That's my justification for it. Why $900 million? Now, there's been hints, I suppose, and ideas in voiced in the press as to why $900 million. And it's not really a logical figure based on everything, a lot of things. It's not a bad figure. But the reason I chose the $900 million is because it's one that people identify with. Maybe it's symbolic. It's a good figure considering how everything turned out. There's nothing wrong with it. But people recognize and understand what you're talking about when you say $900 million, because 10 years ago, the state, we're living pretty tough times. All at once, we had $900 million. The public, as they perceive it, often comment and ask the question and say, you know, the legislature blew the $900 million. Now, Mr. Speaker, you know that my reputation as far as fiscal matters is that I could stand up here and say, yes, we blew it, if I really believe that, because I've fought and argued all the way on the way we were handling our money. But, Mr. Speaker, we didn't blow the money. I think it's terribly unfair to this body, to the legislature, for anybody to say we blew the money. I'll tell you why we got rid of the money, all right. But I don't know of any of the expenditures. I can't think of a single one. Probably there are some. But I can't think of a single one that didn't come about because somewhere out there in the public, they were putting the pressure on us to provide things that we've never had the money to do before, and we were doing it. We're acceding to their wishes. So when the public, I've felt all along that when the public were giving the legislature a bad time about blowing the $900 million, they weren't being fair. But whoever said there was any fairness in politics anyway? So I'm in a position that I could take their side if I really believed it, but I don't. Now, we have another opportunity. Some of the needs have been taken care of. All of them haven't. We have enough money to do what? Do everything as far as that part of it's concerned. We can take care of the needs of the government. We can take care of the loan programs. We can take care of all the reasonable needs of this state. We have enough money now to do it and still have enough left over to put $900 million in the permanent fund. Why the permanent fund? Very simple. It's part of the Constitution. It says at least 25% of the royalties, leases, and bonus go into the permanent fund. I subscribe to that idea wholly. Some people have made the argument and are much in favor of the time when we have increased revenues, surplus, if you want to call it that. I think of it as money in excess of our immediate needs. But when that happens, the argument is that we should increase the contribution rate to the permanent fund. I disagree with that for the simple reason that we, although we might have the money sufficient to do that this year, next year, the year after that, there might something come about where we couldn't afford to do it. Hence my argument that the proper thing, because the law allows us to do that, the proper thing to do is for this legislature, as a responsible, intelligent body, is to assess the situation each year, decide how much money is needed to run the government, how much to take care of the loan programs and all the other things that we want to do, and the money that's in surplus or excess to our needs, simply appropriate it directly into the permanent fund. Then if there's some kind of a catastrophe next year, there's some kind of a fall off in revenue, then we can simply make again, as intelligent people, the assessment as to whether we can or cannot. Mr. Speaker, I told some people in my district before I came here that I probably look forward less to this session than any that I've been in. And I was real sincere about it, because I have the feeling, because of our financial condition, that we're going to set the pace for probably the next decade, for all I know. I believe that we'll set the pattern this year. And I want, that's the one reason that I think that it's important that this year we take the surplus funds that we have, the funds that we don't really need to operate the government, and put them into the permanent fund. Next year, if we can do it, we'll do it again. We will have set a precedent, and we will have put a sort of a burden on the following legislatures to at least act as responsibly as we have done. I believe that. I think that's the proper thing to do. Some of my colleagues have been a little concerned about whether or not the permanent fund is the proper place to put the money. One of them, a good friend of mine, referred to it jokingly, I hope, as a black hole. Another one says you're retiring money. I don't view it that way. I view it putting money in the permanent fund because the principal stays there. The interest comes back to the general fund for the people to make their own decision at the time as to how they want to spend it. I look view it as a trust, as an investment. And again, Mr. Speaker, if you're worried about you know what happens with the money when it goes to the permanent fund, let me use the footage figures again for you. The permanent fund right at the present in round figures that as of today, aside from the Beaufort sale, amounts to about $241 million. This has come in with a 25% contribution. Let's talk, and it's earning, as of today, it's earning 11.7%. But let's just use, to make it real easy, let's use 10%. As to what the $900 million would do, the day we put the $900 million in there, by 1 year later, the earnings alone at 10% will have earned us 59,875.2 feet of dollar bills, or a stack 11.34 miles high. That money comes back to the general fund. We can use it as we see fit. I've made the argument that it's in the past, and you've heard me make this, that it's not proper that we, this generation, should spend all of the money and leave nothing for the future generation. To be consistent, I've also argued the other way, that it's not fair that we should live, the present generation should live in poverty so the future generations can live in luxury. This is part of my personal philosophy. I've done it all my life. I spend some and I save some. When I make a lot, I live a little better. And when I, you know, I save more too. I don't see anything wrong with that. I don't see anything wrong with that as a philosophy and a policy for the state. You're probably going to hear the argument made that we don't owe the future generations anything. I won't buy that. I say, what have your children done for you? What do your parents do for you? My parents did everything for me they could. It wasn't much, but they gave it all they had. And I'm willing to do that much for my children and grandchildren and the future generations, and I think it would be completely immoral, irresponsible, and everything else considered if we blow the whole works today with no regard for their welfare. You can say, okay, we can do the same thing. We can put it into education. We can put it into buildings. We can do all of these things that will last and the future generations will benefit. That's true. The only thing wrong with that is that if you make all those decisions, you leave them no decisions to make. I'm willing to put it in the permanent fund in the trust and let it earn money, and they can, it can come back to the general fund, and they can make their own decision as to how they want to spend their heritage, their legacy. I'm perfectly willing to do that. I think there's nothing wrong with that. Mr. Speaker, I'm sure there are some points that I've overlooked and missed. I had a little talk with Mr. Rogers before we started. I said, somebody's going to come on with argument with the figures. Would you be prepared to cover me on figures? I don't even want to get in. He said he'd do that. And I said, at the same time, would you make notes of the points that I didn't cover that should have? So I think I'll conclude my pitch on it with this. Again, those that really believe in it wholeheartedly, I'd like for you to push the green button. Those that have the doubt, if they're not too great, give me the benefit of the doubt. And thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further debate? Representative Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I've said on this floor in the past few days, I heartily endorse the principle of this bill. I endorse the principle because it's removing a large chunk of the so-called excess funds from the grasp of the legislature. I think that's a good principle. I also approve the amount. I think it's not only has historic significance, but I think, as the previous speaker has indicated, it's something that that we can afford to put away for future use. One of the problems that I have with the bill, although I am a co-sponsor, is that we're putting this money into a fund, or we're dedicating it into a fund that we haven't structured. And I know this was mentioned earlier when we were considering which version of the bill to adopt. I'd like to point out to this body that we're going on now the fourth year that we've been working on trying to structure some sort of a management scheme for the permanent fund. And I intend to vote for the bill. I think it's a good bill in principle, as I said, and with this perhaps one flaw, but towards the solution of that flaw, I, for one, intend to dedicate my effort this session to trying to try to get a good permanent fund management structure, and I would urge other members of this body to do the same.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, just a few short comments. In the few short years that I've been down here, I've never seen political stuff stacked 113 miles high yet, and I think you probably take the record in that area. I think I'd like to say just very briefly how I feel about this. When the permanent fund bill or the permanent fund was passed, there was only one red light up there, and it was mine. And the reason why I didn't vote for it, and I still don't have any strong feelings for it at this time, is that there are a large number of unmet needs in the state. There are certain segments of this population in the state of Alaska that forget continuously, without exception, that there are other parts of Alaska that are Alaska. And I sincerely believe that this legislature, along with passing this legislation, are going to pay attention to those needs. We have older people that are being ignored. Their needs are sometimes, I think, left behind. We have people that are sitting in jails that are, people are just sitting there rotting. There are people who are put in jail because of alcohol-related crimes. They're not getting any alcoholism treatment in the jails, even though in their sentence they are required to have this kind of treatment. Rape-related cases, their people are not getting psychiatric treatment, and when their sentences are fulfilled and they're back on the streets, there won't be any change in their behavior. I think I could go on and on. One of the points that the eloquent speaker from Ketchikan noted was mentioned poverty. And there are people that live in poverty now. And there's been hope and promise of getting things done for them that haven't been done by any government. And a lot of people say, well, maybe the people just better get off their lazy duffs and do it themselves. Well, I maintain that those people are going to need an awful lot of help because there are no bootstraps to hold on to pull themselves up. And I think the system of government that we have has in large degree prevented those very people that we've often tried to help from really helping themselves. I've always seen the permanent fund as a threat, not a means of solving these very difficult problems of providing transportation needs, healthcare delivery needs, communications needs, and other needs that are vitally important to just sustaining people, just so that they survive, just so that they could live. And if you recall, on the floor of this House, there was a pretty tough battle fought for subsistence. Just subsistence means just to live. We had to fight so hard for that that people in the state of Alaska finally recognized the fact that in order for these people just to exist, had to get a subsistence policy adopted by the state so that we don't have to continually fight that battle ever again. Now we have laws on the books and those rights of those people that have lived here for generations before there was a state at least will have an opportunity. In the bill, there's a section, sections 2 and 3, that state that if a version of a management structure isn't created by this legislature, that the $900 million isn't appropriated. And I think that is appropriate because I think this body has the burden of responsibility at this time. Not future legislators, but us here today have to recognize the fact that the state of Alaska has a long ways to go before equity in the administration of justice and in economic equity, social equity, is established. And I probably won't see the day when we'll finally all come together and join hands as brothers and sisters. But I'm really hoping that the people that have co-sponsored this bill will work toward that effort, toward that goal, so that we can come together. I'm only making these comments as a reminder that we should not forget that we've got, simply because we've got the ability to sock away $900 million, that we don't forget that there are people out there that have needs that have not been met. And I've always felt that that $900 million we're talking about today could go a long ways toward resolving those problems, but I understand that there is sufficient money to meet those needs, and I certainly hope that's the case. My first vote on this, Mr. Speaker, is going to be no, just as a matter of protest. And my second vote, when I'm given the opportunity to change my vote, I'm going to vote yes. Thank you.
Representative Eliason.
Mr. Speaker, as one of the two members of this body who was present when we received the original $900 million, I certainly support and endorse this concept. However, there's one thing that bothers me just a little, and I hope maybe the finance chairman could answer this to satisfy my curiosity, is that could this in any way be credited toward future 25% withdrawals?
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, we talked to the Attorney General's office and the Legislative Affairs on this, and this money, when this money goes in there, it's just money in there like any other money. You don't take it out or treat it any different. The Constitution says at least 25%, the opportunity, the provision for making direct appropriations is there. But once the money goes into the trust, it's just money like any of the rest of it.
Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I was not one of the co-sponsors of this bill, and I had a reason for that, which I'd like to at least briefly inform the body about and explain my thinking on it. It appeared to me that what Mr. Freeman wanted to do was a fine idea, but there was one thing that was a higher priority, and that was the priority of making sure that there was money in the Treasury for state expenses if we had some unforeseen catastrophes. We all know how dependent we are today on oil revenues. We can all remember the sabotage attempt on the pipeline, the pumping station fire, the fact that the time that the ice came into the Valdez Harbor and they practically had to shut the pipeline down. There's a suit pending, as you know, to recover the corporate income tax or to have it declared unconstitutional, I guess. And a number of things which could have caused us a severe deficiency and would have changed this so-called surplus into a very real deficit very quickly. And I had to be assured that there seemed to be enough money in the Treasury to take care of any unforeseen contingencies such as that before I could support this bill. I think I now have that assurance. And for those people who might, and some people I have heard this remark, we talk about money to run the state, but of course we're talking about money to pay a woman AFDC payments when her husband went off and left her with two small kids. We're talking about money to keep the highways paved so you can drive on them and all the rest of the services that we expect. As I said, I have now been assured, I think, that we do have sufficient revenues that if one of those things happens and our oil revenues starting to take a nosedive, that we will still be able to operate until we can do something about it. And for that reason, I will now support the bill.
Representative Randolph.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I obviously respect very much Mr. Freeman, and I think he did an excellent job stating his case. And I also fully recognize the sentiment on this floor to pass this piece of legislation. I am, however, going to vote no. I'm going to try to explain to you why. Our state budget has increased 1,000% in the last 11, 12 years since we had money to spend. I don't think there's any real likelihood that politicians in the future are going to be a whole lot different than we have been. I don't believe that government ought to have surplus money. I believe the money that we're getting off the oil revenue belongs to the people. all of the people. If we took the $900 million divided by 400,000, we could give every citizen of the state $2,250. I think that'd be a much more practical, a much more healthy use of the money than what we're proposing to do here. By establishing a gigantic permanent fund, we are pouring in concrete for our children and our grandchildren, a massive controlling government over their lives. That is not what I want to do. The only reason for a government to tax is to provide services, as Mr. Parr just mentioned. And if a government has enough money to provide those services without taxing, it sure as heck ought not to tax. I'm really scared of this philosophy that's really new to me. Maybe not to the rest of you, but it is to me, that government just has an innate ability and right to tax its citizens, whether it needs the money or not. I always felt that if taxes were necessary, they ought to be paid for necessary and essential services that people wanted and were willing to pay for, and I still believe that. Alaska has, and is going to have, the ability to fund its budgets to the excessive degree we have been doing in the last 10 years for the foreseeable future, without personal taxes and without any fears of needing a permanent fund to achieve them. Just the other day in a newspaper, I think it was the Anchorage News, we all saw this. All brand new information to most of us, but they're gigantic potential reservoirs of fossil fuels off our coast. I think you have to be really pessimistic to assume that Alaska will not be a major exporter of fossil fuels for as long as there's a market for it. The present administration has been trying to feed us the big lie, I think, and I think most of us have bought it, that our fossil fuel, our extractive fuel income is non-renewable, non-sustainable, and about to run out. Minority Leader Mr. Hayes made the point the other day, I think, and I agree with him totally, that that's not the case. This summer, the administration came out with 8 or 9 charts, as pessimistic as they possibly could, trying to indicate that the state was about to run out of money. 8 or 10 years, we have a downturn, and pretty soon we're in real trouble. Well, the projections that they used to come to that conclusion was no Buford Sea sale, no pipeline, only a 1% real growth in our income off our oil income. Extremely negative. Since then, just a few short months, they've been forced to change those projections very substantially. And the new budget document has a new chart, which is an extremely different story. It shows that using even the projection they're using now, and that's still only cranking in 2 additional factors, the Buford Sea sale, which happened, we got the money, and the fact that OPEC's already increased their prices once since he said that wasn't ever going to happen again, and they're going to increase it again and again and again, unfortunately. Even using this new and very pessimistic projection of the administration's, we have... It changed, the new chart changes the projection for in the year 2000, we'll have a general fund surplus of about $45 billion as compared to $13 billion using the old chart, which was being touted just as late as 6 weeks or so ago. The dollar figures that I'm using have been adjusted to 1979, and they indicate that in the year 2000, the general fund balance would continue current state expenditures for about 45 years. If you add to that the 7 additional years we could crank in for permanent and general fund balance and the interest on it, the revenues of state government could finance our state government at current expenditures till the year about 2050. The new chart that I show you shows that by the year 2000, the interest revenue alone on our income would equal about 3.6 times the current general fund expenditures. For this year. Now, if we took a little bit more optimistic point of view, and and think that maybe just one of these turn out to be true. That maybe we end up with just, one more pipeline we're not thinking about. That coal gasification becomes economic. And everything I read says that $30 a barrel, coal gasification does become economic. If that's true, we're almost there. And Alaska has immense amounts of coal. I think an extremely good case can be made for the fact that Alaska's future generations will have opportunities that we have not yet dreamed of. And that what we have to leave them more than anything else is the freedom to function as individual people, not as serfs to a very subservient, a very oppressive government. And the golden rule, as I learned it, was he who has the gold makes the rules. And I am scared to death of a $50 billion permanent fund or a $100 billion permanent fund or whatever it's going to be. A few people like us, or worse yet, some of our bureaucratic friends, are going to have substantial control of what happens to that money. I know Mr. Freeman. I believe everything he's just said. And I sympathize with him from the bottom of my heart. I think we both want exactly the same thing. In fact, we've talked about it, and I know we do. He sees us squandering the money, as I do. He thinks he's tying it up in this permanent fund so that'll never happen. I would submit to you that only the constitutional dedication we have is the fact the permanent fund is set up. The reason we've been arguing for the last 3 or 4 years about the mechanism to manage that permanent fund is because we know it's very important. And that's statutorily set up. And anything this legislature can do, another legislature can undo. So let me suggest to you the permanent fund will be invaded by future generations when and if it's reasonable, not reasonable, that wasn't a good term, but when and if it's convenient for them to do so. So let's not kid ourselves that we're setting up something that's going to invite it forever and it's going to go just the way we think it ought to go. As a matter of fact, it won't. What we're setting up with this mammoth government entity, which I appreciate is extremely popular with all of our constituents, I think primarily because they really haven't taken the time to understand the potential effects of it, is that the state is going to become, as we can see right now, the banker of last resort, the employer of last resort, the contractor of last resort. Anybody, any citizen in this state who doesn't qualify or can't qualify, who brings on the ire of the government, won't get a loan, won't get a permit, won't get anything to function. I don't think you have to use too much of your imagination to come to that conclusion. We have the ability, and I agree with Mr. Freeman, that this legislature is going to make some very hard choices. And we have the ability to decide whether we're going to leave our children and our grandchildren a mammoth controlling government entity, or whether we're going to allow them to have the freedom to own their own resources, their own land, make their own individual choices to how they'll live. If I have a choice of leaving my kids $1 million or the freedom to be proud to live the way they wish to live, I'll take the latter. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, replying to the last comment first, far better to leave the kids $1 million and the freedom to live the way they want to live. And I think we have one of those rare opportunities to do just that. Mr. Speaker, you know, we can play with projections till someplace freezes over, but it's ridiculous. It doesn't make a doggone bit of difference. The one thing that's absolutely true of extractive industries is that sooner or later it all gets extracted. If the projections are wrong and they get extracted in 10 years, that's one thing. If it happily they're wrong on the other side and it takes 30 or 40 years for all the oil to be pumped out, for all the gas to be pumped out, for all the gold or silver or molybdenum or whatever it is, then, you know, that's fine. We've got a few more years. But the one thing that is absolutely certain about extractive industries and that's what we're dependent on in Alaska at this time, is that they're all going to be extracted. That's the name of the, you know, that's the name of the industry. That's the name of the game. We can take all the money. We can take the money and run right now. We can divvy it up, I guess, if we want to. But then we don't leave anything for the future, for schools in the future, when there's no more oil to pay for schools. And right now, what's the percentage? 60% of a school bill is being paid by the oil. If we don't have money in the bank, if we haven't done what a prudent Alaskan family person does and puts a few bucks in the bank for future years, there's going to be no money for schools. There's going to be no money for the old timers, that which will be, incidentally, by that time. There'll be no money for aid for dependent children. There'll be no money for all the things that I think even the Libertarian Party recognizes as the minimum services that the government has to provide. But we have this opportunity in this bill, Mr. Speaker, to show that we're heading in the right direction, that we are going to put a lot of dough in our savings account, just as a prudent Alaska family person would do. And boy, if we blow this one, I don't have any sympathy for what happens to any of us.
Representative Moss.
Mr. Speaker, I'll be real brief. I agree with a lot of the philosophy of my good friend in the Porcupine Party, but I agree more with the sponsor of it because, you know, it's kind of like the farmer with a cow. You don't kill the cow to have a feast on beefsteak, because then before long you're out of milk and meat.
Representative Meekins.
Mr. Speaker, just for the record, a lot of good points have been made about other things that might be done with the money that we'll be receiving over the next year or two or ten, hopefully. And, you know, I see all those as necessary. Putting money into the permanent fund is really putting money into an account which isn't really like a savings account in the sense that you can't break open that bank if you need it. But it does provide income to the, a stream of income to the state, and replace if we just blew the money, instead of that we'd have some sort of reliable income to the state. We also need to be concerned about the fact that right now 93% of our income is coming from Prudhoe Bay, and I think that we are in a precarious situation because of that. So we do need to stimulate renewable resources. We do need to diversify the rest of our economic base. And I think, as Representative Parr pointed out, it's very important for us to have a rainy day account, an account which is a true savings account in the sense that if the pipeline shuts down, we can utilize some of that money for the necessary operations of government. And that would be part of any package that I would support going through this entire legislature. And also, as Representative Anderson has pointed out, we have gone a long way towards meeting some of the unmet needs in the state, but there are a tremendous amount of needs still in this state, more than in any other state in the union. And we happen to be very wealthy, but we also happen to have more problems and more needs than any other state. So it is important, I think, that we take care of those. This is just the first step in what I would envision, and I think most people in the legislature would envision, as a comprehensive package. That is, you put some away so that nobody can get out of it, get at it. You put some in a savings account for a rainy day. You diversify the economy so you have a stronger economic base, and you meet some of the current needs that are out there. You do those things, and if you do those well, I think that we could be very proud when we go home. But certainly this is one facet of that approach, and I think it's an important one.
Representative Byrne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a couple of short questions for Mr. Freeman. And the first one's a little on the light side, if I can address Mr. Freeman a question. Mr. Freeman, how would you feel if we raised you $1 billion?
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I was afraid that was going to happen. I seem to have a misfortune of always being too moderate or too cheap or whatever you want to call it. I once worked real hard on a land disposal program to get 5 acres of land. Mr. Byrne come along and raised me to 160. The only thing is that not many, but a few people have gotten 5 acres, and they never did get into the 160. I worked for years, as you know, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I worked for years on income tax reduction, and finally successful and reduced the income tax some, and along comes somebody who wants to wipe it out completely, it seemed like. And then I thought I had a good idea. We put $900 million in the permanent fund. The governor comes along and wants to raise me to $1.5 billion. And so I begin to think that I am a true moderate, and maybe, I hope not cheap, but moderate anyway.
Representative Byrne.
Well, Mr. Freeman shouldn't be too proud of his land program. It wasn't that much more successful than mine, Mr. Speaker. On a little more serious vein, and again a question for Mr. Freeman, we're not putting the earnings from the permanent fund back in the permanent fund. We're putting them in the general account. Now, that does not make any sense to me, and I'd like to have Mr. Freeman comment on that, because what we're doing is putting numbers in there, or mile-high stacks of dollar bills, as he says. But at the rate of inflation, which is 13.3%, I believe, if we're and the earnings at only, say, 10%, or what was it, 11.7%, he said, and we're not even putting those back in the account, so that it's predictable that down the trail a few years, that $900 million is going to be worth about, let's say within 5 or 6 years, is going to be worth about half that. And so maybe we're really playing a game of pretend here. You know, maybe we're kidding ourselves a little bit here. Maybe we're trying to kid the public, because we're really not putting, you know, the earning power back in that account. Mr. Miller is worried about extractive industries. He says we've taken all this oil out of the ground and it's going to be gone pretty soon, or whatever that is, the minerals or whatever. And that there's a lot of truth in that. We're doing the same thing with the permanent fund here. We're putting $900 million into an account. At the same time, we're milking it off through inflation and putting the earnings of it back into the general fund so we can spend it. So we're doing exactly the same thing there, so we're pretending. And I'd like to have Mr. Freeman comment on that, because I don't think the permanent fund is ever going to be successful unless the earnings from the permanent fund go back into the permanent fund.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Speaker, I don't want to stand up here and attempt to make an argument on inflation, because in inflation nobody wins. But I'll make one point, and I think I believe in it wholeheartedly, and that is, if you blow the dough, if you spend it just because it's there, inflation or no inflation, you're not going to have half the $900 million left. Now, there was an amendment put on this bill this morning that I raised no objection to, that hinged it to the outcome of the management of the permanent fund. It kind of places a burden on me. I don't know whether you remember, but just a day or two ago, the Speaker placed me on the Free Conference Committee along with Mr. Chatterton and Mr. Malone to settle the management part of the permanent fund. So I kind of have a problem here. I've got to come up with something. But the time will come when the vote will come back to the floor for you, and you'll have an opportunity to vote on whether you go for or against the method that we handle the permanent fund. The earnings, the law, the Constitution, the requirement right now has nothing to do. All the earnings come back into the general fund. And if this legislature so desires, they can come up with whatever kind of law they want to do that affects the earnings. But that's something we haven't settled yet. So that you still have an opportunity, if you don't like the way it's done, to vote against that one. Because if you vote against that one, this one's dead anyway.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If I may, I also have a question I wish to address to Mr. Freeman. But before I address that question, we all recognize that the state of our economy presently is in a real downturn, that our people within the state are having a real hard time paying their bills and making ends meet. We have a great number of our people that are filing bankruptcy clauses. Now, my question to Mr. Freeman is, while we can take the $900 million and put it into a permanent fund, Do we also have enough money left to help the majority of our people that are paying taxes in this state today? My name is not on this bill as a co-sponsor. That was a very difficult thing for me to do, to not be a co-sponsor. I note that there are about 11 members of my caucus that are co-sponsors on this bill. But if I cannot be assured that some form of tax relief for our citizens can be addressed, I can't vote for it. Thank you.
Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Oro asked me to be ready with the numbers in case anybody asked. I was afraid no one was going to ask. On the last day of May of this year, this is a projection from the Department of Revenue, cash flow month by month, we'll have roughly $1.2 billion, and in the month of June we take in another $450 million, thus leaving us with about $1.5 billion on June 30th. Now, if you assume that we want to keep aside a six-month rainy day account, that would mean that we could, on the first day of July, deposit the $900 million, still have enough for the rainy day account, and keep going. However, that's not the way it's going to work. The $900 million won't go in all at once. It'll go in over a period of months. This cash balance that I've just gone through is after veterans loans and after business loans are taken out, after the state appropriation of capital projects and operating budget is taken out. Now, if you take it all the way to the end of next year, we have enough money to make this deposit into the permanent fund over the year to enact a tax relief equivalent to the initiative, to make the native claims payment, to have a one-year rainy day account, and to have another $900 million left to decide what to do with.
Representative Eliason.
Mr. Speaker, I'm still just a little bit bothered. I'm very happy that they tied us into the fund, but what really bothers me is that I wish they tied it more securely, where we're saying, in effect, this $900 million we're putting in has absolutely nothing to do with future 25% deposits. I'm afraid somewhere in the system that this could be credited towards future deposits, and we'll end up just pre-depositing $900 million and using the money that comes in from now on until we reach that amount.
Representative Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The 25% goes directly from revenues generated into the permanent fund. It never goes into the general fund. We're appropriating money from the general fund into the permanent fund, so I don't think there's any danger of confusing that money in that respect.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, the way I read the constitutional provision that was passed in 76, I don't see how even the stupidest state official or the stupidest judge could interpret that constitutional provision to say that we're making a credit against future royalty payments so that somehow we could get out of paying that 25% every year. I think it's pretty well locked in.
The question before the House is the final passage of the Rules Committee substitute for House Bill number 509. Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
37 yeas, 3 nays.
Do any members wish to change their votes? Representative Anderson. Will the clerk please take the final roll?
38 yeas, 2 nays.
Rules Committee substitute for House Bill number 509 has passed the House. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the passage of Rule Committee substitute for House Bill number 509 be considered as roll call for the several effective date clauses.
If there's no objection, the roll call and final passage will be shown as the roll call on the effective date clauses in Section 2 and Section 3 of the bill. Will the Chief Clerk please, Representative Cotton.
Would it be necessary to adopt the Finance Committee's letter of intent?
I think a separate motion would be appropriate on that. Representative Meekins.
Speaker, I'd move to adopt the letter of intent by the Finance Committee.
I don't know that members have that on the desk. If the chief clerk has that, I think it's short. You could have the committee report read. What page is it? It's on page 79 of your journal.
Did you want me to read it?
Yeah, would you please read it?
House Finance Committee Letter of Intent on House Bill 509. It is the intent of the House Finance Committee that the $900 million appropriated to the Alaska Permanent Fund be deposited as quickly as is consistent with cash flow requirements of the State General Fund. If such cash flow requirements allow, it is the committee's intent that the Commissioner of Revenue make monthly deposits that will, in the shortest possible time, total $900 million. Signed by Representative Russ Meekins, Chairman, House Finance Committee.
The motion before the body is the motion to adopt the House Finance Committee report. Is there objection? There's no objection. The House Finance Committee report is adopted. Will the Chief Clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
Citation in memoriam, Martin Severson, former legislator, requested by Representative Anderson.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I think you probably remember Mr. Severson. He served in the 10th legislature and served with dignity and honor. I remember him as a very gentle man, and as stated in the citation, Mr. Severson will be remembered by his many friends as a man who was always willing to take the time to help, as a man who shared the concerns of his friends and neighbors, and as a man deeply committed to solving the problems of a changing state. Mr. Speaker, I would move the citation.
There's no objection. The citation will be adopted unanimously. Representative Hayes.
Mr. Speaker, with the sponsor's permission, I would like to suggest that all members of the House be shown as sponsors of this piece of this citation.
If there's no objection, all members of the House will be shown as sponsors of the citation. That completes today's calendar, brings us to unfinished business. Representative Cotton.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, the on the bottom of the calendar it notes that the Anchorage legislators will meet with Mayor Sullivan at the Hilton Hotel at noon. Actually, that should have read 11:30. And so as soon as we get out of here, there will be a van. The House van will take as many people as we can get in it down to the Hilton so we can be there on time.
Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to waive Judiciary Committee referral of H.J.R. 52, which asks the FAA not to levy their security screening requirements on our bush taxi operators.
With the concurrence of the Chairman, Judiciary referral on House Joint Resolution number 52 will be waived. Other items, unfinished business? Representative, House, please stand at ease. Will the House please come back to order? Are there any other items, unfinished business? I do want to try to adjourn so the Anchorage legislators can attend their meeting. If there's no other items, unfinished business, announcements of committee meetings. Representative Buchholz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House committee will meet this afternoon at 2 o'clock instead of 1:30. At 2 o'clock because most of the members are from Anchorage and that meeting may take us longer than what we normally have. So it will be 2 o'clock and we'll be talking about the foundation program, mostly to make some recommendations on the report of the task force this afternoon.
Representative Brown.
Speaker, the House Commerce Committee will continue our sunset review on the Board of Architects, Engineers, Land Surveyors immediately after adjournment of the session. I've spoken to the two Anchorage members. We'll have to cover for them. So if the other members, the other two animals from Fairbanks, whatever kind they are, and the gentleman from Sandpoint and possibly the gentleman from Kenai could join us, we'll have a quorum.
Are you having a meeting tomorrow morning, Representative Brown?
Yeah, I blew it again. Yes, tomorrow morning, 8 a.m., Board of Public Accountancy.
Same old message. Representative Miller.
Speaker.
Speaker, the House State Affairs will meet at 2 o'clock, not 1:30. We'll meet at 2 o'clock to take up only one bill. That'll be House Bill 589, the Special Appropriation to the Near Island Bridge.
Representative Parr.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Judiciary will meet at 3 this afternoon. We have House Bill 375, which requires a public defender to the municipalities pay if you use a public defender, and Executive Order 42 transferring the Public Defender's Office to the Department of Administration. We're also going to be able to ask Mr. Shortell, the Public Defender, who will be here, about House Bill 572 on guardianship and about the possibility of handling the multiple defenses.
Representative Smith.
The Finance Subcommittee that's covering the natural resources budget will be meeting at 8:30 tomorrow morning in the House Finance Committee room. And at that time, we'll have people in from Department of Natural Resources to explain the new budget process.
Representative Parker.
Mr. Speaker, CRA will meet tomorrow morning at 8:30 to take up four bills, House Bills 625 and 626, grants to the Fairbanks Town and Village Association, and House Bills 580 and 582, planning and creation of the unorganized boroughs.
Representative Osterbeck.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Resource will meet today at 3 o'clock in room 118, taking up House Bill 599, definition of game regarding muskox and buffalo, and House Bill 590, prohibiting of removing of herring from Alaska before processing.
Representative Freeman.
Finance Committee will meet at 1:30. We'll post the subject matter.
Representative Moss.
Mr. Speaker, the House Subcommittee on Education Finance will meet after the full committee, Finance Committee meeting. We will meet in Representative Montgomery's office.
There are further announcements. Representative Anderson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, on the calendar today, there is one. People at the State Museum are inviting legislators to a reception from 4:30 this afternoon to 6 p.m. And there have been several questions about the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Alaska Native Sisterhood reception for legislators. That is tomorrow night, February 1st, at 7:30 p.m. at Willoughby Hall. I'll remind people again tomorrow. But I do know about this function, and I know they go through an awful lot of trouble to get their various foods and other things together for the legislators, and I really hope that people would set that time aside for tomorrow evening. Thank you.
There's no further announcements. Special orders. Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to have a few moments, if I may, to talk about the Commission of the Family.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know that we're in a hurry, and I ask the House members for their indulgence for a few moments to speak on this bill. Mr. Speaker, as a member of the House, as you well know, this has been designated and proclaimed the Year of the Family. And certainly this is long overdue when we consider how vital the family is to the American belief and the American life. Many of you realize that during the last decade, they have developed much concern of the diminishing role of the family in modern life. And these concerns are well-founded when one reviews the government laws and regulations and programs that were well-intended, but in their implementation served to disunite the family rather than strengthen the family. Mr. Speaker, during the interim, I have looked into some of the grievances of my constituents and became very concerned about this problem. And thanks to the foresight of some of our legislators that developed the research committee, I was able to have more documentation. And this is what our research agency has partially come up with as to laws and regulation that certainly are a disincentive for family unity. One little example I can bring, because some of the people spoke on unemployment this morning. If we find a young man that suddenly is unemployed, he is allowed $90 a week for work unemployment. If he has a wife and one child, this is very hard to survive on. And certainly, we see a lot of young people and even middle-aged people looking for jobs today, a problem that we have yet to address. However, he cannot get much compensation for his family. We do have a program made to dependent children that would help the wife and the child if they separate. And it's a shame when our society says today or encourages young people who really love each other and who want to stay together, but for the mere fact of having to survive in our economic life, they have to separate. So within their hearts and soul, they know that they are family, but on paper they must separate. Then she's entitled to $350, an additional $50 for each child. And it's a shame that we have this kind of legislation. There are other programs that cause our older people to separate, cause our older people to sell their house to the state rather than leave it as an inheritance to their sons and daughters. So it's these things that I hope that we can address in the Commission for the Family. At first we thought, well, we would introduce a number of bills and resolutions to correct these problems, but it soon became too obvious that this would be too numerous, and the best method would be to establish the Commission for the Family. And I hope that all the members do personally become involved in this aspect of our life and do whatever they can personally to make it expeditiously a reality, and hopefully this new commission will be functioning within a few months. Thank you, sir.
Are there further special orders? Representative Anderson.
Mr. Speaker, I move that we adjourn till 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.
There's no objection. We're adjourned till 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.